Okay. So first of all, the shiur this evening is dedicated by Chaim Avigdor Snow on the occasion of the yard site of his father, which is tonight, Shlomo Zalka ben Rav Moshe, Mr. Saul Snow, and the Shlomo should have an aliyah, both from the specific learning which we're doing tonight and the overall participation in Torah and mitzvahs. You know, Chaim Avigdor in particular is a valued member of the shiur. I think everybody who's a member of the shiur is a valued member of the shiur. It's not like we have, you know, valued members of the shiur. And then the other, you know, the non-valued members of the shiur, but, you know, Baruch Hashem, that Shitaka be a source of nachas to the neshama, and it should be a good debater on behalf of the entire mishpacha.
Amen.
So what we had left off on Gimel Amud Aleph, again, the long, long conversation between the Ribbono Shel Olam and the Umos HaOlam, which is going to take place at the end of time. The Umos HaOlam coming to the Ribbono Shel Olam with a taita, why can't we get schar for our support of Torah, our support of mitzvahs, to which the Ribbono Shel Olam basically answers, what support of Torah, what support of mitzvahs, what are you talking about? It's not true. They go back and forth. And finally, the Umos HaOlam have to concede that, you're right, you know, we really didn't do anything, we really don't deserve anything. Really, we pale in comparison to the Jewish people. It's not like we're not deserving and they're not deserving. No, we're not deserving, they are deserving, right? So it all comes to an end. And then finally, the third wide line towards the bottom of the page, Amar Lefanov, Ribbono Shel Olam, Tna Lanu Mirosh V'Nasen. Okay, Ribbono Shel Olam, you're right. We didn't support Torah, we didn't do mitzvahs, we're really not deserving. All right, give us a second chance. Zakti Ribbono Shel Olam, Amalon Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shaltim Shebaolam, you fools. Mishatarach be'erev Shabbos, Yochal b'Shabbos. A person who labors on Erev Shabbos to prepare the food, he will be able to eat on Shabbos. Mishalotarach be'erev Shabbos, Mehechon Yochal b'Shabbos. A person who doesn't work on Erev Shabbos, how does he expect to be able to eat on Shabbos? In other words, the Olam Hazeh, this world is doma to Erev Shabbos. Olam Haba is doma, it's comparable to Shabbos. So if you work in this world by learning Torah, by doing mitzvahs, you know, so you'll be in a good position, you know, in the Olam HaEmes.
And you do have second chances in this world.
Yeah, second chances in this world, right. But as one Shabbos comes, it's too late to put up the tshuva, right? So, you know, the Hainu Ach, the same thing over here. You know, you can do Torah and mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim in this world as much as you want, but once the next world comes, it's not shaykh for you as an individual to do anything to advance your scorecard, so to speak. Everything that's done had to be done already from before the Yom Shekula Shabbos. You know, the one exception which we have, again, here's going to be an exception, but the one general exception which we have is in terms of not Olam Haba for the collective Jewish people, but an individual's Olam Haba. We know that after a person dies, and it's relevant to the dedication tonight, after a person dies, he's no longer able to perform mitzvahs and maisim tovim to raise his neshama up, but his children or his talmidim or people who are affected by him, who do mitzvahs and maisim tovim in this world with the intention that schar should somehow affect the neshama of this person and the Olam HaEmes, so that is something which we believe is possible. In other words, that the neshama can move up madregas in the next world, not that it personally is able to do Torah mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim, but you know, those who are left behind in this world can do Torah mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim on behalf of that departed neshama.
So why don't people who are survivors of parents like learn every single day, have in mind that it should be.
So Enoch Hinami. So the truth is,
every single day, yeah, it should be.
Enoch Hinami, you're right. You know, on the yard side, it's considered to be particularly appropriate and apt to do that because on the yard side, the neshama has a special opportunity to be able to move up in the Olam HaSa'oyana. But you're 100% correct. I mean, you know, anytime, that's the concept Chazal talk about, Sivsosov Dovavos Bekever, that when a person learns the Torah of someone who has departed, so his lips move in the grave. In other words, that, you know, he's impacted on in a positive way by the fact that people are still learning his Torah and, you know, doing things in his name, doing Maisim Tovim in his name in this world. So, Enochinami.
Anytime you learn, you could say, was Eichon Nishmas your parents?
Yeah, 100%. It would be, you know, I think it, again, I don't know, well, I don't know exactly how these things work, but you know, mistama, if a person was trained by his parents to learn and he's learning, you know, because of the chinuch and the hadracha that they gave him, you know, that mistama has an impact on the parents' neshamas, even in the Olam HaEmes, even without having to say it explicitly. But yeah, I mean, certainly saying it explicitly would be beautiful, wonderful, and a beneficial sort of thing.
And the fund is open all year long.
And the fund is open all year long, also, right? Yeah, make out the checks. Okay. So really, you shouldn't get a second chance, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. El afal pichein mitzvakala yeshli v'sukah shma. But nonetheless, look, I have a very simple mitzvah. We'll define why it's a simple mitzvah in a moment. I have a very simple mitzvah. It's called sukkah. L'chuv asu osa. Why don't you go perform the mitzvah of sukkah, and then, you know, and we'll see if you do a good job with that. So that will be begedder, a second chance.
How will they do that?
I'm sorry?
How will they do that?
How will they do that, meaning what?
In the next forever.
Right, so I mean, how will they physically do that, or how does that work with this understanding that, right, so this Gemara sounds a lot like the position of the Ramban and the Mekubalim, that Olam Haba, first of all, is something in this world, and Olam Haba involves the guf and not just the neshama. In other words, the Rambam's position was that Olam Haba is something which takes place for every individual after he or she dies, and it refers to the neshama's ability to cling to God without a body. The Rambam is very, very explicit in Mishneh Torah. There's no such thing as a body in Olam Haba. The Ramban and the Kubbalim held that no, Olam Haba is something which is going to happen at the end of history when Mashiach comes, and there's the Tchias HaMeisim. That's when Olam Haba is going to start here on this world, and Olam Haba involves the guf as well. It involves the body as well. So again, the simple reading of this Gemara seems to imply, it seems to fit in better with the Ramban and the Kabbalah.
There will be mitzvah. There is no issue of Erev Shabbos.
I'm sorry?
According to the Ramban, there wouldn't be an issue of Erev Shabbos.
No, so according to the Ramban, still Olam Haba, the mitzvahs that were done, you know, it's no longer, humanity fundamentally changes at that point. So in other words, the opportunity to change your status apparently comes to an end once Olam Haba begins. Even though Olam Haba is something in this world, but Olam, it's not, that aspect is the same, even though the guf is still going to be intact.
Is there a chiyuv mitzvahs?
Is there
a chiyuv mitzvahs in the Ramban's Olam Haba?
In the Ramban's Olam Haba.
And is it Chayar Nodesh?
Right, so the Ramban writes the Yetzirah is going to be removed by Olam Haba. He writes that on Chumash, that Umal Hashem Lekachos Levav Chavias Levav Sarech, when Olam Haba comes, the Yetzirah altogether is going to be removed. So although I think there's still a concept of doing mitzvahs, the ability to, I guess the schar is going to be a different type of schar. I mean, it's a schar where you're not working against the Yetzahara at that point. Right? As if there's no Yetzahara, so the schar altogether is going to be a different type of schar.
Why are we learning that the sukkah is a mitzvah of Olam Haba? Why didn't you learn it? They came, they said you didn't do it. So, okay, so God says, all right, let's see what you do. I'm giving you a mitzvah kala in this world. Start building sukkahs.
Right, so the only thing is that the previous phrase about Mishal Tarach Be'er Shabbos Yochel B'Shabbos, Mishal Tarach Be'er Shabbos Yochel B'Shabbos, Mehechan Yochel B'Shabbos, that seems to be talking about Olam. I mean, Rashi says explicitly Be'er Shabbos Be'olam Hazeh, right? And Shabbos is supposed to be Olam Haba, and he explains that a little bit more in the forthcoming Rashi. It's Hayom La'asosam Be'olam Hazeh V'Olam Mocher, then Yochel La'asosam Olam Haba. Rashi learns that what we're talking about over here is Olam Haba, and according to Rashi's understanding of the Gemara, once we get to Olam Haba already, really they shouldn't have the opportunity to be able to do mitzvahs in such a way that they'll get schar. Yeah.
According to Ramban, there's no that Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba is one and the same.
Right.
So where are all the tzaddikim that were nifter over time?
Right, so
where
there is
right now before Mashiach comes.
Right, so there is something called the Olam HaNeshamos, meaning the neshamas after they die do go up to some place, you know, they are in some state of being, but those neshamas are all going to be restored to physical bodies when Olam Haba comes,
but
when Mashiach comes.
Are they now, prior to Mashiach coming, receiving their reward?
They're getting something, right? But the true reward, the true Olam Haba, is after Mashiach comes.
So that's very drastically different than the Rambam.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the Rambam holds the Ikar Schar they're getting now. Whereas, you know, according to the Rabban, the Mekubal, the Ikar Schar they're going to get, after Mashiach comes already. So says the Gemara, Umi Moses Amres Hachi, how can the Ribbono Shel Olam say that? In other words, how can he give them the opportunity to do a mitzvah now? For Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ma'ay Dikstiv Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom, Hayom La'asosam, V'lo L'mocher La'asosam, Hayom La'asosam, V'lo Hayom L'tol Schar. Right? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi taught, again, similar to what we said before, about Mishatarach Be'erev Shabbos, the Pasuk says, Asher Anochi Mitzavcha Hayom, right, these mitzvahs which I command you today should be on your heart. So Hayom La'asosam, the performance of mitzvahs is supposed to be Hayom, today, which again Rashi, as we saw before, says in Olam Hazeh, V'lolam Ocher La'asosam. But in Olam Haba, you'll no longer have the opportunity to be able to do them. And Hayom La'asosam, and V'lo Hayom L'toschar. And today, the task that we have is to perform the mitzvahs. But the schar, or the main schar, the main reward for mitzvahs, is not going to be in this world. The main reward for mitzvahs is reserved for Olam Haba. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, schar mitzvah by al malecha, that the reward, or the main reward, you know, for mitzvahs that we do, is not really primarily in this world. Yeah, we do have some things that, Adam ochel perosem ba'olam hazev, akarin kayemes olam haba. Sometimes a person can reap dividends from mitzvahs in this world, but certainly the main reward which we talk about is reserved for Olam Haba. So the idea, you know, again, going back to the idea of Erev Shabbos and Shabbos, the main idea of this world is to perform the mitzvahs, the main idea of Olam Haba is to be rewarded for the mitzvahs. Right? So perhaps in terms of the issue of, you know, what, according to the Ramban and the Kubbalim, so there's no mitzvahs bichlal in Olam Haba. I mean, it sounds like you are doing mitzvahs. But after all, you know, it is a physical existence. Right? So perhaps the idea is that, you know, the same way that there might be some dividends of schar in Olam Hazeh, there might, you know, there's certainly the obligation to do mitzvahs in Olam Haba, and in Olam Haba, according to the Ramban and the Kubbalim's understanding, according to the Rambam's understanding, it's not shayach to do mitzvahs in Olam Haba, because you're just a neshama, not a guf. But according to their understanding, there's the obligation of mitzvahs in Olam Haba, and just perhaps the schar is a different or much lower kind of schar because of the fact that, again, the Yetzer Hara has been taken away. To a large extent, the schar that we get is because of the wrestling, the struggling with the Yetzer Hara in the absence of the Yetzer Hara. So, you know, you're supposed to do these things, but you're not going to get so much schar for them because it's not even difficult, you know, for the person to do those mitzvahs at that point. So how can that, in any case, how can that be? How can the Ribbono Shel Olam offer them this mitzvah of sukkah when it's no longer a time to be able to do mitzvahs? It's a time for receiving reward. So the reason is that the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to speak, has rachmanus, and he doesn't set up situations for his creatures which are going to make things difficult for them, or to squeeze them, to make life very hard for them. So mimela, the Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, is going to bend over backwards, kivyachol, in this particular case, to give them an opportunity which they don't deserve, and in a sense doesn't even fit the normal paradigm. You know, it's not a time for being able to do mitzvahs, but the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to be as fair as possible, even bending over backwards to be fair. Okay. V'amai kori le mitzvah kala, ask the Gemara, so why does the Ribbono Shel Olam refer to sukkah as a simple mitzvah? Answer, mishum deles bechsar in kis, because there's no expenditure involved in building a sukkah.
Go to Leiter's sukkah center and then say
right, you know, so what are they talking about? I mean, you know.
The sukkah shall orish of Yosin.
Yeah, no. So, but I think here it's just even a little simpler. I mean, you see, by the way, I mean, this was the sukkahs of way back when. What would you do? I mean, the walls oftentimes were made already. In other words, you took pre-existing walls. Or if you didn't have pre-existing walls, you used all of the halachic etzas that are given in Maseches Sukkah. You know, you use Dofen Akumba, you know, you use Godas, you know, all the various different kinds of lawful, you know, all the different kinds of heterim, yeah, legal fictions, you know, that create walls al pidin, but don't involve a lot of expenditure lahalacha. I'm sorry? You take off the roof, or if you just have some walls, so you go out, you collect some schach, right? What's schach? You know, it doesn't mean that you go and you buy bamboo from the special schach store. No, you go outside, you collect some branches, you get a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And, you know, apparently it wasn't that much of an expenditure, you know? I mean, I guess it stood up also, right? I mean, you know, you didn't necessarily have the kinds of winds and the kind of weather that we have to deal with, right? But, it wasn't a big expenditure. So in any case, that's why it's called the mitzvah kala. You're not even going to have to spend any money on it. Miyad kol echad ve'echad noto v'holich v'osa sukkah b'rosh gaka. So right away, all of the umos ha'olam appreciate this opportunity, so everybody goes to the top of his roof, and he makes a sukkah, right? By the way, so why did they go to the top of their roofs? So again, the various agadic explanations, but it could be just, apipashtos. This was a way to avoid any expenditure. Why? Because the roof had some kind of wall, yeah. Some kind of makkah. They weren't chayv in makkah, but no, okay, they had some kind of walls just for safety reasons around the roof. So in other words, with that kind of structure, really all you had to do was, to place the schach on the top. Right? So this was just going to the gag, you know, just b'derech pashtus was probably just the easiest way to go and create the sukkah. What happens? V'akodesh Baruch Hu makdir aleihem chama b'tkufas tamus. The Ribbono shel Olam makes a piercing sun. Makdir, Rashi writes, is lashon nokev, right, like a piercing. So the Ribbono shel Olam brings out a piercing sun, b'tkufas tamuz, like at the height of this, as if it was the height of the summer. V'chol echad ve'echad mevayit b'sukkos v'yotzei, and every person gives his sukkah a big kick. He says, "Feh, this is not for me. It's much too hot. I can't sit in the sukkah. It's too hot. It's too sweaty. Whatever it is," and he leaves the sukkah. Right, but derech klal, when we have difficulty sitting in the sukkah, it's because of cold. But, in Eretz Yisrael, which presumably was the place where all of this is taking place, you know, it can be heat, which will be the factor which will drive the person out of the sukkah. Shenemar nenatkos mos roseimo, nashlicha mimenu avoseimo. Right? The Gemara makes reference to the pasuk in Perek Beis and Tehillim, which talks about the futuristic times. Right? Lom rog shugayim lo'um yegu rik. Right, when Moshiach comes, you know, the nations are going to get all stirred up. So one of the things that the nations of the world say is the Natkas Mosro Seimo, let's throw off our bonds, our chains. This mitzvah of sukkah, which is chaining us, which is restricting us, let's throw it off. Nashlichu mimenu avu seimo, and let's take these sticks, the bundles, and throw them away from ourselves. In other words, let's take this schach, which we put on top of the sukkah, and throw it off. We have no interest in the mitzvah of sukkah anymore. So, in fact, the Gemara Makdir, wait, the Ribbono shel Olam intentionally brings out a piercing hot sun in order to essentially drive them out of the sukkah. I thought you said the Ribbono shel Olam was being extra special fair and creating a situation that the nations of the world wouldn't have any tainas on the Ribbono shel Olam whatsoever. So here it seems that he's acting, not so fair. In other words, he creates a situation where Kimati knows that they're going to reject the sukkah. So, you know, what kind of fairness is that? So answers the Gemara, Mishum di Yisrael Nami, Zimnim de Moshchel Tkufas Tamuz Ar Chago. No, for Jews also, every couple of years it happens that you have an Indian summer, that it's still very, very hot up until Sukkot. have a late Sarah, and it's difficult, it's painful, it's you know, it's distressing to sit in the sukkah, right? So since the Jews occasionally have to deal with it also, it's only fair to put the non-Jews in that situation and see how they react. Effect the Gemara. So then how can you have a Taina Taka on the Umos Ha'olam? Because after all, Halacha is Mistar Potter Min HaSukkah, that if you're really suffering, you don't have to sit in the Sukkah altogether. So Mimela there were Potter. So what's your Taina? So what's the problem? So answers the Gemara. Nehid the Potter, true, they were Potter, but Ba'utim Imivate. But they didn't have to kick it. You know, a Jew, when he leaves the Sukkah, you know, when it rains, and you can't go into the sukkah, you know, you feel bad about it, you know, even if you don't feel so bad about it, you would certainly never kick the sukkah, especially after all that money you spend in putting up the sukkah, right? But you never kick the sukkah, you never reject the sukkah, you know, okay, you can't, either you deal with it, or you feel bad about it, but you know, you would never do something to disparage the sukkah. The fact that they kicked the sukkah on the way out, that's really the taina that the Ribbono Shel Olam has against them. So miyad Hakadosh Baruch Hu yoshev u'masachrik aleihem. When Hakadosh Baruch Hu sees the way they react, he sits up there in heaven and he laughs disparagingly at them. Shenema yoshev b'ashamayim yischok. That same pasuk in Tehillim in Kapitel Beis says that the one who dwells in heaven is going to laugh at the nations of the world when they react in such a way. And Amar Rabbi Yitzchok ein schok lifnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu ela osa hayom bilavad. That the Ribbono Shel Olam only, the only time that the Ribbono Shel Olam laughs, certainly laughs in that kind of disparaging fashion, is on that day, you know, because in a sense the Ribbono Shel Olam is happy that the nations of the world have demonstrated, you know, that they really are truly not deserving of any schar whatsoever. This just shows. This is just the proof of everything that the Ribbono Shel Olam has done throughout history and is trying to bring home to the nations of the world, you know, in this long conversation which has taken place. You're really taker not deserving. I gave you everything. I gave you every chance and every second chance and every third chance that you could possibly imagine. I bent over backwards for you, and you proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that I made the right choice, so to speak, by investing in the Jewish people as opposed to the nations of the world.
How do we know that they're going to kick the sukkah?
I'm sorry?
How do we know they're going to kick the sukkah?
Meaning because it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
Right, and I mean, you could ask that on the entire Gemara. How does the Gemara know that they're going to make this time? How does the Gemara know they're going to make that time? So again, I think it goes back to what we quoted from the Rashba in his Chedushi Agadus, you know, to Avodah Zarah. The Rashba says the whole thing is a marshal. Right, I mean, al korchecha, right? I mean, for that very reason, you know, if the nations of the world just, you know, if they just get a hold of the first two blad of Gemara Avodah Zarah, they'll know exactly what they're supposed to do, and they'll know exactly what they're not supposed to do. You know, so how do you know that it's going to play out in such a fashion, right? So it's al derech mashal.
This is what they've been doing till now.
I'm sorry.
This is what they've been doing till now.
Right. In other words, you know, according to the Rashba, we quoted. He says the whole thing's al derech mashal. It's to teach us certain lessons for the Jewish people in terms of the importance of kavana in doing things, which we mentioned this, you know, that when you engage in secular activities, if you're mechaving l'shem shamayim, you know, that I'm sleeping because I want to get strength to be able to learn Torah, to be able to do mitzvahs, you know, so then the sleep becomes something significant. But if, like the nations of the world, you go about secular activities, even ones that benefit Torah, but you don't have in mind that it should benefit Torah, it's, you know, it's shalom and miskaveh, so then you're not able to come and ask for any kind of schar. Their activities are, you know, what they are projected as doing is supposed to be a lesson for us. That's the way the Rashba writes. So according to the Rashba, you know, the fact that this is all a discussion about the future, okay, it's all said, you know, al derech mashal also. So what can you derive from this particular part of the Gemara? I mean, what's, other than the fact that sukkah is cheap, it's a mitzvah kala, it's inexpensive, why Davka pick sukkah? I mean, certainly there are plenty of other mitzvahs which he could have given them, which don't involve money. Right? I mean, not everything involves an expenditure. Right? So why Davka sukkah of all things, and why do they kick it? Why taka do they kick it in such disregard? What would have? Why wouldn't they have just walked out of the sukkah and just said, okay, we can't, Ribbono Shel Olam, you know, we gave it our best shot. I mean, here they were pleading for a second chance. After all of that pleading, what motivates them to kick the sukkah in disgust?
Now, I was going to say, in answer to your first question, why is it a mitzvah kala? Because, aside from the fact that the expense is low, but under optimal conditions, it's a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
That if it's not raining and there's no heat wave, it's a very enjoyable experience to sit in the sukkah at that time of the year.
Right. So you would think that they would have embraced it, and yet even this mitzvah kal is very simple.
Once they discovered it wasn't a foot, it was a pleasant, they got right. angry, they kicked it.
Right.
I mean, there are other mitzvahs also like sukkah. Characteristic that I'm thinking about, that, so I don't really know why dafka sukkah, but it occurs to me that the mitzvah of sukkah has nothing to do with the goyim. Even if Hashem would give them that mitzvah, it's a celebration of exactly who they're not and who we are. Right. I mean, it's at the moment that we became the Bnei Yisrael, that we, so to speak, were separated, became the Am HaNivchar, were separated from the goyim, and created that difference between us. That's what we're commemorating. So for them, I can see the disdain because it represents everything that they don't want it to represent in the context of this Gemara. How come not us? How come them? How come not us? And you give them a mitzvah of sukkah, of course they're gonna resent that.
Oh, okay. So let's take that point and pick up on that a little bit. I want to suggest that perhaps the reason the Ribbono Shel Olam picks the mitzvah of sukkah, again, the Gemara says the mitzvah kal, it's cheap, but again, as we pointed out, there are other inexpensive mitzvahs, right? He could have created a whole bunch of birds and said, okay, go do shiluach hakan. There were many, many opportunities that the Ribbono Shel Olam could have, many, many mitzvahs that he could have picked, that would have not involved a tremendous expenditure. Clearly, the fact that sukkah is a mitzvah kala is one aspect of why sukkah was picked, but there's something particularly special about sukkah as well. The Sfasemis writes in his discussion of sukkahs, and again, this is found in earlier sources as well, that the sukkah is supposed to represent the cheder yichud between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael, the same way that a chosen and kala come together in a cheder yichud in order to cement fully the relationship which exists between them. Klal Yisrael, after having gone through the Yomim Noroim and having hopefully rededicated ourselves to the Ribbono Shel Olam on Yom Kippur, to have created recreated the marriage between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam on Yom Kippurim, so Sukkot represents the cheder yichud, the full sense of being intimate, of being close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, which follows in the wake of the Yomim Noroim. Right, ki yitzbeneinu b'sukkah b'yom ra'ah. As we're coming in, the sukkah is God's house, so to speak. He's the chasan, right? It's his cheder, it's his bayis, and by coming in, that cements the relationship which we have with the Ribbono Shel Olam. So in other words, what the sukkah represents generally is the notion that the Ribbono Shel Olam is not just one aspect of our lives. Our entire life is lived in the shadow, in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Right? That's what the whole idea of sukkah is supposed to represent. That's what the whole idea of a cheder yichud is supposed to represent. Right? Even though the chasan and kala don't spend the entirety of their lives together in the cheder yichud, for those first 10 minutes, right after the chuppah takes place, when the chasan and kala come into the room together, essentially they're saying, whatever else happens in life, as long as we're together, our relationship is going to color, is going to overshadow every single aspect of our lives together. The Ribbono Shel Olam, in this whole conversation with the Umos HaOlam, basically says, you want to know the difference between you and the Jews? The Jews have dedicated themselves entirely to this concept of living with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We have ups and downs, just like, in a relationship between chasan and kala, you could, between husband and wife, you can have ups and downs. But basically, as long as they're together, the cheder yichud represents the fact that there's this ongoing relationship, and nothing really happens outside of that particular relationship. That's going to color every single aspect of what they do together. The Jews, despite the fact that we've done many averos over the course of time, on a fundamental level, we have this concept that we exist as people in order to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, in order to be close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and that that relationship is going to color every single thing that we do. Now come the nations of the world at the end of time, and they say, okay, we'd like to buy in to all the schar that the Jews are getting. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, okay, I'm willing. But you have to buy in to the fundamental concept which underlies the relationship between God and the Jewish people. The sukkah is not just one mitzvah among mitzvahs. It represents that fundamental concept that to be a Jew means that you're constantly in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and everything you do is going to be impacted on, is going to be colored by that to one extent or another. You can't move without thinking about God, Torah, and Halacha. You want to sit down to a meal, okay, you better make sure that it's kosher. You want to enter into a business deal, okay, you better make sure that that's kosher also. You want to live in a particular community, okay, well, you know, mincha is coming, do you have a place to daven? You know, I mean, every single thing, there's no such thing as a parava thing in life. Every single thing you do in life is going to be shaped by that relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, to be honest, even as Jews, we find that standard difficult to uphold. We often find ourselves being mitzta'er in the sukkah. We often find it difficult to sit in that, to go through life with that constant sense of the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Wow, sometimes you just want to break out of the room and, you know, get out of the box, you know, and go and do something else for a little bit. Okay, so the Ribbono Shel Olam understands that. He understands that mitzta'er poter min ha-sukkah. That sometimes it's hard to sit in the sukkah. Sometimes, you know, there are a lot of yetzaharas out there in life. There are a lot of other things we'd rather be doing. There are a lot of things which, you know, make it difficult to really feel that presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam constantly. Okay, the Ribbono Shel Olam understands. But a Jew would never kick the sukkah. Meaning, even when a Jew leaves the sukkah, even when he can't live for whatever reason with that sense of the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, he always realizes that that's the ideal, that that's the way things are supposed to be. Okay, maybe I can't sit in the sukkah right now, but I would never kick it. I would never disparage the ideal of being able to live my life in the constant presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The nations of the world in this Gemara not only are unable to sit in the sukkah, they can't bear that fundamental concept of Yiddishkeit, which is you live life in the constant presence of God. Not only can they not deal with that, but they disparage the ideal itself. They kick the sukkah on the way out, basically saying, we don't want to buy into this concept. You know, you want us to be religious? Okay, we'll be religious. Tell us which... What's that?
Didn't we have Acher and others?
Yeah, no, so...
Would kick it?
Yeah, so...
They did kick it?
Right, no, again, everything here is being discussed collectively, meaning, are there individual sin... Are there individual Jews who, you know, who have kicked the sukkah throughout history? Yeah, absolutely. Are there individual non-Jews who, you know, would be willing to, quote-unquote, sit in the sukkah? Yeah, chasidei umos ha'olam. You certainly have such a concept. But as a collective, the Gemara is saying, as a collective, we embrace this concept. The nations of the world do not embrace this concept.
Is that accurate, though?
I mean... Yeah, we spoke about this last week.
Yeah. Again, if we're going to generalize, is it fair to generalize? And if you do, I don't know. You look
around.
What are
you basing it on? Yeah.
Right, so... Maybe give me a few minutes and we'll come back to that and talk about the accuracy. Right, so it's only mitzvah kala in the monetary sense of the term, but in terms of what the mitzvah represents, I mean, the mitzvah represents a fundamental yesod of what Yiddishkeit is all about. To be a Jew means to be in the sukkah constantly, and, you know, even if you can't manage to be in the sukkah, you know, to be in the sukkah, at least to hold up that ideal that life is about being in the sukkah. Right? Basically, when the Ribbono Shel Olam brings out the chama and he shines it and causes it to become uncomfortable for the nations of the world, it's not considered to be unfair the way the Gemara presents it. Why? Because the Jews also sometimes have it hot in the sukkah. Meaning, what I think is, look, part of being Jewish is dealing with the times where it's difficult to sit in the sukkah, it's difficult to feel like you're in the presence of God, and to nonetheless stick with the program. You know, even if you can't stay in the sukkah, to stay with this constant presence of, you know, this constant feeling of God's presence, to at least acknowledge that that's an ideal. If the nations of the world can't even acknowledge that, that even during the difficult times, that they hold that there's a there's an ideal, there's a maila to be in the constant presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, so then what are we talking about? How can the Ribbono Shel Olam have a relationship with people who don't really believe that it's important to have this ongoing relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam? So this is an ikkar, this is a fundamental thing which the Ribbono Shel Olam is putting out to them. And it's not just that they failed a particular mitzvah of sukkah, they missed the yesod of what Yiddishkeit is all about. Look, you have people, even within our own camp, you know, I'm very interested in being religious, you know, from Saturday morning from 9 to 11, I'll be religious. And then, you know, Ribbono Shel Olam, the rest of the time is my own. Right? So we don't look at it that way. You know, your time is Meshubat the Ribbono Shel Olam 24/7. And not just in the way in which a college professor once described a college schedule to me. Right? The college professor once told me, you know, as college professors, we work 24/7, 24 hours a week, 7 months a year. Right? So, you know, not just in that sense of the 24/7, but in the real sense of the 24/7. Right? By the way, he was about right. You know, when you do the math, it's about right. But no, you know, we believe in being 24/7 in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you don't buy into that idea, so then how can you say that you want Torah and you want the tzchar and you want the tzchar for mitzvahs? You know, you're missing the ikkar of what it's all about. Just to go back to the point Chaim Meir made, you know, a few moments ago. So is sukkah a uniquely Jewish mitzvah? I mean, after all, it's linked to the Anani HaKavod, you know. Again, according to the opinion which many Rishonim accept, right? So the answer is yeah, in the sense that the Anane HaKavav surrounding the Jewish people was symbolic of this idea as well, and that Bedavka, when the Jewish people are being molded and formed as a people when they leave Mitzrayim, it's crucial to protect them with the Anani HaKavod, not just for the protection that they afford, but because of this yesod, this ideal which is being knocked into their heads. You should know, you're constantly in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Anani HaKavod symbolized that, right, at the get-go of your being a nation. But here, the Ribbono Shel Olam is essentially holding out to the Umos HaOlam the same possibility that he gave to Klal Yisrael at the beginning of our being a nation. When we started off as being a nation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yeah, come, sit in my sukkah. So, yeah, I didn't have that same conversation with the Umos HaOlam way back when, but I'm willing to. If you want, you know, come into my sukkah. My sukkah is your sukkah, right? It's come in, and I'll put, so to speak, Anani HaKavod over you, and I'll enable you to buy into the same concept which Klal Yisrael bought into and which defines Klal Yisrael's role in the world. And basically the Umos HaOlam say, nothing doing, we're really not interested. And if you're not interested, if you're mevayit in the sukkah, if you kick the sukkah on the way out, if you disparage this ideal, so then the Gemara is saying, you're really incapable of absorbing all of these things.
I've heard that, you know, when it comes to you have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. Yeah. You have Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, the means of becoming closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam through Yira.
Mm-hmm.
You come to Sukkot through Ava, through right. Simcha.
Which so, the Tfasemus, by the way, develops as well. That
right, I mean, not my own. So here, Ribbono Shel Olam gives them this mitzvah that's done through Ava and Simcha,
right.
and they can't pull it off. So what's the point of any, you know, if you have no Yira, then there's no possibility, no potential of Yira.
Right. So you don't have Yira, you don't have Ava and Simcha.
You don't have Ava and Simcha.
So what's the point of Yira? What exactly do you have?
It's not given with such heat that it's an Ava.
Right, but again, to be mevayit, it goes back to that, you know. Okay, I can't handle it right now. Look, sometimes, love and happiness is hard to handle also, right? You know, but at least you don't disparage the concepts, you know. You don't kick it aside and say, I'll have nothing to do with it.
They didn't value it.
Right.
They didn't value it because the mitzvah was not given to them originally.
Right. But again, I think it comes back to they didn't value it because the yisod behind the mitzvah of sukkah was something they rejected.
If it was given to them, they wouldn't have accepted it.
Right. And as the concept behind sukkah, the concept of, you know, that Yoshev Seser Elyon, you know that B'tzel Shakai Yislo, no, that they're dwelling in the presence of the Ribbon Shalom on a constant basis. That concept is just something they say we don't want any part of.
It's interesting, Mr. Manager, on a nice sukkah's day,
yeah,
what percentage of Jews will go into a sukkah? On a nice day.
You say nowadays?
Nowadays.
Yeah, no, chinami. I mean,
they don't even get to it with the kid.
Yeah. Look, I mean, the truth is, and you know, I know, and Jap made this push, you know, over the past couple of years. Sukkot, unfortunately, is one of those holidays which is really neglected in the broader Jewish community, the assimilated Jewish community, and it's such a shame because, you know, it's really it's a beautiful yaltiv.
More people do a seder, I would say.
Right.
Sure.
Yes. And Pesach is a lot harder than Sukkot.
It's not mitzvah kala.
Yeah, right, it's not mitzvah kala at all. Sai in terms of work, sai in terms of money, yeah. Right?
Even in the quote, what we call amongst Orthodox, I mean, the Ramaz has yeshiva and Chol HaMoed because if they wouldn't expose them to the sukkah, they wouldn't know what it is.
Lav Davka, right. Lav Davka, they would ever use it. Yeah. Right.
And Chol HaMoed, so they stay at yeshiva?
Yep.
So that
they can sit in the sukkah. Ira mentioned
that
to me.
Yeah, that they can actually sit in the sukkah. Right. So I think when you look at this Gemara from this perspective, it's not accidental that this Gemara opens up Maseches Avodah Zarah. Right, and this, I think, comes back to the issue which Danny raised before. But aren't there some lousy Jews, and aren't there some good non-Jews, and how accurate is this to begin with?
The message is so simple, they're so clear.
Right. So we noted a couple of weeks ago, you know, when we began this Agadata, that it's very unusual to begin a Masichta with Agadata. I mean, usually you have to sweat a couple of dapin before you, before you hit the Agadata, and then, you know, you could say Torah and Drush a little bit. You know, it's very unusual to be right up here in the beginning. And I think that perhaps part of the reason that Maseches Avodah Zarah starts with Agadata very atypically is because this is a Masechta which is not just about Halacha, but on a very fundamental level, it's about Hashkafa. In other words, all the Halachas in Maseches Avodah Zarah are about how to distinguish us from the nations of the world, whether in terms of Inyani Kashrus, Inyani Avodah Zarah Mamish, you know, some of the Inyani we spoke about in terms of separating ourselves from Eidei and Shalumos HaOlam, the holidays which they're following, right? So that's the theme of all these halachas, but on a much more fundamental level, all these halachas are supposed to bring out the basic hashkafa that what they believe in is anathema to us, and we believe that our Torah is true and their religions are absolutely false. Now, the truth is, unfortunately, oftentimes we need a lot of chizuk on that point because we are a minority, we are a persecuted minority, we are a minority which has seen very difficult times in life. And conversely, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah in the world generally have been the majority, have been the stronger ones, have been the more powerful ones. And there's a tremendous temptation, you know, on our part to wonder, well, maybe they have the truth and Cholila we don't, right? I mean, after all, if they're so successful, they must be doing something right. So this Agadah in particular, right, in the beginning of Maseches Avodah Zarah, is meant to reinforce to us, don't think that just because they seem to be successful, they're building empires, they're the Romans, they're the Persians, they're all the people we spoke about in the beginning, don't think that their success means that they have something which we lack. No, fundamentally, we have something which they can't really understand. Fundamentally, we have this concept of being constantly in the presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is a Jewish concept, and which is a concept which certainly the Ovdei Avodah Zarah of yesteryear lacked, right? So realize, going into Maseches Avodah Zarah, that despite whatever difficulties we may have as the Jewish people in this world, we have something very, very precious and very, very special, which the Umos HaOlam don't have. And there's got to come a time where they're going to regret and recognize that we have the MS and it's something which they fundamentally lack. this whole very long Agadita is meant to give us that hashkafa, you know, as we begin Maseches Avodah Zarah, because all of the halachas ultimately that we're going to be learning are going to go back to that fundamental hashkafa. We understand the idea of what it means to be close to God. Fundamentally speaking, of the Avodah Zarah don't. They don't get that concept. And that's why all these halachas are here, to put a barrier, to put a separation between us and them.
I was going to say, you know, another thing that's interesting about in this part of the mashal, where they're given sukkah, where they say to Rabbi Shalom, please give us a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like the Achrus Hayamim, that they've already lived their lives, and they have a chance to do a mitzvah. So I can't see how somebody could do that. In other words, you lived your life. You know you're not going to get an aid because you weren't a good person. So now you give me a second chance and you throw it away. So that part of the mashal is not consistent with any possible reality, you know.
Well, in other words, the fact that they begged for a second chance and they threw it
and
away?
They're giving a second chance and they know what's going to happen to them if they don't take the second chance, and they throw it away anyway. So
I'll invite you to come to YU. I'll introduce you to some of my students.
Yeah.
And, you know, people beg sometimes for a second chance, and then they throw it away. I mean, the guy who asks for a retest, and then he doesn't bother studying for the retest either.
What are they thinking?
What am I going to tell you? It happens. I won't tell you which specific students.
He uses so much energy.
What's that?
Right.
I mean, unfortunately, it happens. I mean, you know, when a person is in a rut, you know, they find it very difficult. They know they want to do something to get themselves out of it, but they really can't bring themselves to do what they know that they need to do. I mean, look. I mean, somebody who wants to quit smoking or drinking or one of these kind of vices, right? So, they know exactly what they need to do. Right, but they find it very difficult because it's very, very hard. It's very, very hard. All right, so just to come back to the point that Danny made before. So, you know, aren't there, you know, nice non-Jews and aren't there lousy Jews? And, you know, isn't this being a little bit painting everyone with a broad brush? Well, I think if you look at it in the context of we who worship God versus Ovdei Avodah Zarah, which after all is going to be the topic of this entire Masechta, so the Gemara wants to bring out, we who worship God, we who believe in Taras Moshe, we who believe in the Torah that came to us from the Ribono Shel Olam, we have that concept. Again, not all of us in the Jewish nation buy into it. Maybe today one can argue that 90% of the Jewish people doesn't buy into it. But as, you know, in terms of the... I'm sorry?
As a nation,
or in terms of the religion which we hold of, our religion is the religion which preaches that we should view ourselves as being in the constant presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Avodah Zarah doesn't preach that. The Avodah Zarah Dika religions basically said, you know, you brought karbanos here and there, you tried to appease the gods whenever you thought that you needed rain or something like that, and then you went about the rest of your activities. You know, there wasn't this sense of being constantly in the presence of the gods, of the deities. There wasn't even a sense that the gods demanded moral behavior. Right? I mean, after all, if there are, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 different gods, every god has a different concept of what you're supposed to be doing. And again, we know that the gods didn't act particularly morally or ethically towards one another in all of the stories, you know, that we know from mythology. So, you know, if they're not going to behave, mehechet I see that I'm supposed to behave.
The religions we have today are far different.
There's a distinction between Umos Olam and Ovdei Avodah Zarah.
Right. So again, I think a lot of the Agadita is addressing Davka Ovdei Avodah Zarah. And then the religions of today fall out on some spectrum along that. I mean, the Far East, probably a lot of it is still of the Avodah Zarah in the classical sense of the term. Christianity, I think we spoke about a little bit. According to most poskim, is considered to be Avodah Zarah as well, right?
It's you don't necessarily say that a Christian doesn't feel himself in the presence of God.
I'll tell you one thing, which I think is true when it comes to Christianity. They certainly don't have this sense that every action in their life is regulated by some kind of law or you know, or something of that nature. I mean, a Christian professes his faith, believes in Oso HaYish, and he believes that's good enough. That, you know, that shoots me right up to heaven, right? Again, you look at certainly a Christian America. Okay, so you're religious.
America, you're going, not a religious country.
America, relatively speaking, is a very religious country. I mean, you know, we're in New York. We don't feel it as much, but you go to the heartland. You know, they're very stark Christians. But you know, even being a stark Christian, so it means that you know you spend a couple of hours in church Sunday
morning,
and that's it. You know, there isn't this sense that every single action of my life is going to be controlled by this thing. They don't have a concept of halacha, right? You know, not just the specific halachas, but the notion that you know I have to be done in my mind. You know, this is I do it this way, I do it that way. Yeah, that's
no
not right. That's not a Christian notion.
But that's not shaykh to
them. I'm sorry.
Shulchan Aruch, the concept. Why would it even be shaykh to them?
According to some achronim, you know, even Bnei Noach, when they're mitzvah in dinim, it means they're mitzvah in choshen mishpah. Right. So it's a lot to know. Right. But I'm saying even from the
choshen mishpah or
choshen mishpah. Yeah, according to some achronim. So. You know, you have to start kailulim for chashan mishpat. You know, for b'nei no. No, but I'm saying even
the point that it's not shaykh because they don't have those rules.
They don't have.
They don't have anything to learn. They don't have anything to occupy or govern how they behave on a minute by minute basis of every day of every year.
Right, and that's the idea of the sukkah. You know, the sukkah means you're constantly in God's presence. You know, everything you do, you have to stop and think. What does the Ribbono Shel Olam want me to do in this circumstance? We're used to it. I mean, we don't always follow it, you know, but at least in theory, you know, every single thing we do, we have to stop and think, you know, is this mutter, is this aser? I mean, just translate that into, does the Ribbono Shel Olam want me to do this? Does he not want me to do this? I mean, we have this constant sense of God's presence, which is facilitated by the halacha. That's why the halacha is there. I mean, the halacha creates this constant sense of God's presence. The closest thing to that, I mean, the closest thing to that is Islam, right? Where they do have a concept of law which is somewhat similar to our halacha. Right? The Muslims, that's the closest thing to what we have, right? And, you know, taka, according to certainly the Rambam, and I think it's probably fair to say most poskim, Islam is not considered to be avodah zarah. Not for us, but it's considered to be probably the closest thing which is out there to Yiddishkeit. But again, even Christianity and certainly the other religions that are around today, they don't have the sense of God's ever presence, you know, which is which can only be facilitated by a system like the halacha that is, you know, yored, you know, to every single action which a person does. And forces him to ask the question, is this mutter, is this asur, is this the Ratzon Hashem, or is this not the Ratzon Hashem? You know, that's the concept which is behind the sukkah. And again, in a sense, it, even to this day, in many, many ways, that's really uniquely ours and something which they don't share in. Al Kopanim, I think again, it's just very appropriate that this lesson, you know, about what makes us unique, when we talk about V'hivdi lanu min ha-tohen, that sense that God is ever present with us, which is brought out by the halacha, and that's something which certainly the of the avodah zarah lack, and to a large extent today, even the umos ha'olam, as nice and as wonderful as they may be, lack that concept. That's a very fitting and appropriate way to begin a masichta, which you know is devoted to setting up barriers, basically, you know, between us and of the avodah zarah, and to an extent as well, just stand between us and the umos ha'olam.
Why is Hashem only left once a year and gets angry every day?
Yeah. So the schok over here, the pashtus is you know score. Right. In other words, it's not. We're going to see again. We'll see a little bit later on in the page about. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam being Mesachek im Levyoson, you know, that he engages in having fun, so to speak, playing with the Levyoson. Here, the schok we're talking about is schok of scorn, of derision. You know, he looks
at the nation,
you know, under normal circumstances, you wouldn't think that's really becoming for the Ribbono Shel Olam. But here, precisely because the nations of the world thought that they had the key to God's ear, and they show that they're so incapable of understanding it, it provokes this kind of scorn. It's interesting to note the Marsha in Brachos, when he talks about the fact that Kel Zoim B'chol Yom, you know, that God, there's a millisecond or whatever, that the Ribbono Shel Olam gets angry every single day. The Maharshal writes, it's because of the presence of Avodah Zarah. You know, the fact that there's still Avodah Zarah in the world, you know, is what provokes that single instant of anger. And the implication seems to be, once Avodah Zarah is eradicated, that moment of anger is not going to be there anymore. The Gemara says that the Ribbono Shel Olam gets angry for a fraction of an instant every single day, and Bilam HaRasha was able to be Mechaven HaSasha, he was able to know exactly when that time was going to be, so he could, you know, aim his curses exactly at that particular moment. So the Ma'ashon, Masech the Brachos, where that whole sugya is brought, it's brought over here also, but I mean in Brachos where it's talked about, the Ma'ashon says, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu get angry for, I mean, it seems like a very dangerous thing to do. Okay, so I'm going to get angry, you know, for a millisecond every day, and if you can figure out what it is, you could potentially blow up Klal Yisrael Cholila, you know, through, why do you have to set that up like that? I mean, why not just not get angry? Right, so the Maharsha basically says the presence of Avodah Zarah means that there has to be a certain divine anger in the world. It wouldn't be appropriate for there to be Avodah Zarah and for HaKadosh Baruch Hu not to respond with a certain level of anger, because that would imply that HaKadosh Baruch Hu approves or condones.
It should be directed only at the Avodah Zarah. It should be directed at those who are not involved in that.
Right, but as the world as a whole is not complete, it's not perfect.
Well, you would think if someone is angry for a reason, it should be directed at that reason only.
I think part of the anger is disappointment. Right? In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam wants the world to be perfect, and if we were doing our job, you know, so the Avodah Zarah would vanish, because our working to bring Moshiach would eradicate, you know, this Avodah Zarah and take care of the problem. So it's our problem also. It's not just their problem. It's the problem of Klal Yisrael as well, that the Avodah Zarah still exists in the world. Just to see a little bit vayit in the Gemara on Gimel Amud Beis. Ikadamasni lahoda Reb Yitzchak ahoda Tani Reb Yossi. Right? Some apply the statement of Reb Yitzchak that ein schok Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu also Yom B'Levad, that, you know, there's only one time that the Ribbono Shel Olam laughs sarcastically and in scorn. It's applied not to this story but to another story, because Rabbi Yossi taught us in a different context that, again, similar to what we learned over here, in the Emos HaMashiach, in the end of days, the nations of the world are going to come, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah are going to come and want to be Meskayer. They're going to want to convert to Judaism. What do you mean? What do you mean that they're going to come and convert? We're not going to accept it. Vatanya, ein mekabelin geirin limosa Moshiach, kayotze bo lo kiblu geirin lo b'mei dov lo b'mei shlomo. We have a brisa that says that we're not going to accept geirin when Moshiach comes. Why? Because if you're just a geir when the going's good, so it means that there's a certain insincerity to everything you're doing. Oh, you know, so throughout history, while the Jews were being persecuted, you said, I don't want to join the Jews. All of a sudden, Mashiach comes, the Jews are restored to Eretz Yisrael, to sovereignty, the Beis HaMikdash. You know, to be a Jew is to be on top of the world. And all of a sudden, now you want to be a ger? So what kind of ger is that? You know, it's clear that your intentions are less than noble, right? And similarly, that's not just, you know, for the future, but as historic precedent, during the times of David and Shlomo, when the Jews were able to rule over a beautiful and prosperous kingdom, they didn't accept any gerim, because, you know, to be a ger under those circumstances meant you wanted to be on top. So it was also the Mefoshim right over there, Misyadim, they, not that they converted, they gave the appearance of being Jews, as we'll see actually here in a minute, right? It doesn't mean that they went through a formal conversion process. All of a sudden, you know, there was a rush on kapotas, you know, in the local Persian stores. Everybody was going out, you know, and trying to look Jewish. Right.
The
Ger HaMaleki. Right, so that's early on, really, before the Malchus of David is underway. In other words, that's Shaul has just been killed, right? But Mestama, he's been Mizgayer, you know, at least a little bit before that.
Ashkelon's
wives? I'm sorry?
Shlomo's wives.
Right, with the exception of Shlomo's wives. I know Chinami. I mean, the Rambam writes that they were Megayer Kahalocha. But you see, unfortunately, in that case, you know, that came back to haunt Shlomo HaMelech in a big way, right? And again, it's not good to make exceptions like that. You know, you can be Megayer, you can't be Megayer unless you're a princess and you want to marry the Melech Yisrael. You know, it doesn't lend itself to good things.
Back to Megillah, Kinofa Pachad HaYehudimon, were they afraid to be mugged by Jews if they weren't dressed as Jews? It doesn't sound logical.
No, fakert. In other words, Achashverosh now said the Jews can now go and take revenge against all their enemies. So you know what? So well, who's called an enemy? Well, you know, if I get dressed up like a Jew, so they'll certainly leave me alone. What's that?
It happened for 2 days that they got you. It doesn't mean the rest of their kingdom, they were getting revenge on them?
Right. No. I mean, not that they were afraid necessarily of being killed forevermore, but clearly the winds of influence had shifted.
Yes.
In Persia, and now, it's good
so
to be Jewish.
Like a Jew?
You know, they started. I mean, not just that. You know, they were over the Avodah Zarah, but they put on the lavush just as a costume. You know, they started being Jewish light. You know, they started trying to blend in with the Jews. They didn't go through a formal gayrus process, but they were. You know, they. They said, okay, it's good to be Jewish, so you know what? You know, so maybe we'll start with the gefilte fish stuff, you know, we'll start with the lavush. It's not so bad, you know, I mean, Cholin sounds good. You know, they took various steps, you know, to try to identify with being Jewish, you know, but it doesn't mean that they went through the whole process, you know, that the way they would have to do a Gaia Kahalocha. So similarly, the Gemara says over here, right? So what does it mean that La'asid Lava, at the end of days, the Avodah Zarah are going to come and be misgayer. We won't accept them. Ela shenasu geirim gerurim, but they rather became geirim gerurim, geirim who were dragged along. Rashi writes shenasu geirim gerurim may aleihem misgayrim. They came on their own to convert to Judaism. Vanamo mekablinon. We wouldn't accept them. They're trying to portray themselves as geirim. The mishum gedulasim de Yisrael kol avdi, because it's clear that they're just doing it shelo l'shem shamayim. They're doing it because they want to join the winning team. Diksiv migar itach ani useich olayich yipol ba'ashir useich. As the pasuk says in Yeshaya, migar itach olayich yipol. Right, whoever lives with you will fall in with you, which Chazal here are interpreting to mean. Whoever lives with you, who sticks with you through the bad times, Alayich Yipol will be able to cast his lot with you in the good times. And one of the things that's asked from the Ger Halacha Maaseh before he comes to convert is, you know that the Klal Yisrael are a persecuted, people who are not liked by the nations of the world. Do you still want to cast your lot together with this persecuted people? And it's only if the ger answers yes that we're mekabel him as a ger, right? If that's not relevant, if we're not a persecuted people, right? If there's no anti-Semitism out there in the world, Baruch Hashem in America, there's not much anti-Semitism, but still run into it, right? But you know, when there comes a time where there's no anti-Semitism at all, when you walk into the subway car and you have a big mug in David. And you know everybody says, okay, take the cream of the crop, you know, take the choice seat, right? If that's what it means to be Jewish, you know, so migari tach alayich yipol, you can't come in when we're on the winning team already, and there's no downside to being Jewish, and expect that's going to be a proper game. So how would we be able to be mekabel geri lemos haMashiach? So says the Gemara, no. They are geirim of their own accord. Umanichin tefillin b'roshayim, tefillin b'zra'oseyim, tzitzis b'vigdeyim, mezuzah b'pischeyim. Right? They go through the motions. You know, they walk the walk, they talk the talk, they put on the tefillin and the tzitzis and the mezuzah. Kevin shiroi melchemes gog umagog, omer lahen oma bosem, omrim lo al Hashem v'al Mashicho, shenemar, lo marog shugoyim l'ulam yegurik, right? So they're all ready to sign up to join the Jewish people until the Mechemes Gog u'Magog, when they ask, you know, Gog, you know, I see you're making a war. What are you making a war? We're making war against the Jewish people. Oh, you're making war against the Jewish people. Oh, were we Jewish? Nah. Did we say we were Jewish? No. They take all of the mitzvahs that they had taken on. They throw them away. And that's what the pasuk says. The Nafkas Masro Seimel. Let's throw off our bonds. Va'kodesh Baruch Hu Yoshev U'Mesachek Shenemar Yoshev Ashramayim Yitzchak Amar Rav Yitzchak Enol HaKodesh Baruch Hu Schok. The Ribbono Shel Olam laughs in scorn at those nations who tried to fool everybody into thinking that they were really sincere, when in point of fact, you know, you just throttle them a little bit and already they give up whatever, you know, little external appreciation of Yiddishkeit they have.
Isn't Golden Mother supposed to be before Mashiach comes?
Yeah, so apparently you see there's a beginning of the period of Moshiach, then Gog and Magog happens after that, and then there's the finishing off of the process at the end. We'll pick up Ezra Hashem with a little bit more on this next week. Rabbi Chaim Ben Akasha, Omer Asa, Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lezachus, Lezisrael, Shikach, Yerulam, Torah, Mitzvah, Shnema, Shnema,